the U.S. Embassy in Israel in Jerusalem al-Quds, as affirmed by his nominee for Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. Palestinians have reacted with outrage at the remarks. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said Blinken's remarks ran counter to international laws and resolutions that recognize al-Quds as an occupied city. Spokesman Hazem Qasem called the comments an affront to all Arab nations and states, while Biden has indicated that his administration will restore Washington's pre-Trump policy of opposing settlement expansion. He nonetheless claims ironclad support for Israel. Former President Donald Trump announced the U.S. recognition of Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital in December 2017. The U.S. moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to al-Quds the following year. Ever since the U.S.'s moves, Palestinians have stopped recognizing any intermediary role by Washington in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. We're now joined by our correspondent, Mona Candil, who's with us from Ramallah. Mona, tell us more about the Palestinian reaction to the recent comments from the incoming U.S. Secretary, top diplomat, that is.
Yes, Palestinians condemned the statements of Blinken, former Grand Mufti of Palestine and Imam at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Sheikh Akram al-Sabri, considered that the statements confirm the U.S. strategy to continue supporting Israel. Hamas movement, as you were saying, the spokesman of Hamas movement, Hazem Qasem, said that such comments reaffirm the failure of relying on U.S. administration to support the Palestinian rights. Also, there were statements from the jihad movement saying that Blinken's statements were like a slap in the face of anyone from the Palestinians or anyone who would be bidding on Washington as an honest broker for peace. Officials from Fatah movement at the same time also say that the decision of relocating the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem al-Quds came from the Congress, and that's why they cannot reverse the decision. However, the Fatah movement is calling on the administration of the new American administration to relocate the embassy at least to the western part of Jerusalem al-Quds, and to clarify that the eastern part of Jerusalem al-Quds is occupied and should be the capital of the Palestinians.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Candil joining us from Ramallah. Joining us on debate, we have Mr. McNapier from the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who's with us from Edinburgh. Mr. Napier, it's great to have you with us. Well, the incoming Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, said during his Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday that the Biden administration will keep its U.S. embassy in Jerusalem al-Quds. In your opinion, is that setting the tone for what to expect in terms of the U.S. backing of Israel?
Yes. When Trump upset and destabilized and caused chaos, a lot of people thought that it would be good to get back to normal under Biden. That's what's happening. But the normal for Palestinians is one of unremitting support from Washington for Israeli crimes against the Palestinians, for ethnic cleansing, for driving them out. And is anyone really surprised that Biden has decided to leave the embassy in Jerusalem? Of course not. Everyone could see this coming. So yes, it's business as normal. The empire will maintain its patronage, its relationship with Israel, because that is based not upon the success or otherwise of political lobbying in the USA, important though that can be to a degree, but a profound strategic link-up where Israel is the US's unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East, a projection of US power, a client of the US, which really has to look to the US for any major policy decisions it decides to make. And this is the situation going forward. It's not that, I mean, whereas Trump would play to a white supremacist base of supporters and would relish rubbing Palestinians' faces in the dirt. I don't think Biden does, but he still has to represent the Pentagon, the State Department, and U.S. elites in maintaining that very tight military link and military support for the Israelis. And it's not that he hates the Palestinians, just doesn't care. Israel is their ally. Israel can do pretty much what it wants within some limits, and that's what Biden is telling the world now.
Let's also bring in Executive Director of American Human Rights Council, Imad Tamad, joining us from Michigan. Mr. Hamad, welcome to the program. Well, let's pick up on the topic. The GOP Senator Ted Cruz of Texas asked Blinken, quote, "Do you agree that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and do you commit that the United States will keep our embassy in Jerusalem?" He responded, "Yes and yes." That answer goes a long way in terms of the continued support Washington will maintain for Tel Aviv, doesn't it?
Well, that comes as no surprise. The change of administration does not mean a change of policy, foreign policy, especially when it comes to the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's a fact of life, for the time being at least, that Israel continue to be the favorite baby for the United States, and in many cases, the United States unfortunately put the Israeli interest even before its own. This is a fact that we recognize. This is a fact that we disagree with. I think the Arab American and Muslim American community at large in the U.S. Totally disagree with all the prior U.S. administrations, including the current one, the new one, the Biden administration. So the position is stated by President Biden and Secretary of State comes as no surprise whatsoever. That gives us more of power and more of determination as community at large to continue our diligent work in order to influence and hopefully change this policy. Definitely the policy toward the Palestinians and their basic human rights of self-determination, statehood, and to be equal to all other nations is something not going to be easy to fly in the U.S. And definitely that doesn't help the cause of peace. We all know that no peace if justice is missing. And as long as justice is missing and justice is not provided to the Palestinians, no peace can be real or no peace can be achieved in the region. So Palestinians have the right to be angry, have the right to be upset, have the right to condemn it. However, we understand the mechanics of the political system in the U.S. And so far, unfortunately, this is the fact that we have to live by for some time ahead of us.
Let's go back to Mr. Napier. Palestinians, as we know, have responded to Blinken's remarks. An imam at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and former Grand Mufti of Palestine has said that the difference between Trump and the new president is no more than some tactics. Both have the same established foreign policy towards Israel and the Arabs. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you think there is going to be any meaningful change between the policies of Biden and Trump, or is it just going to be a facelift, if any at all?
Well, remember, Biden was Obama's vice president. And if we look at the Obama-Biden record in the past, it can be a guide to what we can expect from them in the future. Obama's parting gift to Israel, if you remember, in 2016, was an additional $38 billion in military aid to this state, whose army stands accused of massive war crimes and crimes against humanity. Did the Americans know what they were financing? Yes, the CIA knows what's going on, tells the policymakers, and they continue to send the aid to Israel. They know what they're doing. While he was vice president, Biden sat in on meetings with Obama. I mean, we know that Trump murdered General Soleimani with a missile strike. But during his final year, Obama and his Vice President Biden dropped 26,000 bombs on countries around the world. That was a bomb or a missile attack, 3 per hour, 24 hours a day for the whole of the year. And it was up on the year before. This record is worse than Trump's. Now, Trump, please don't think I'm anything other than delighted that Trump has gone. He's a monstrous figure. But do you prefer a monstrous figure like Trump, who's not very clever, actually, and thank God he wasn't so clever, against somebody who's much shrewder, much more calculating, much more presentable, who talks about peace and bombs around the world constantly for year after year? Which is preferable, an intelligent, cunning opponent, or somebody as foolish as Donald Trump? That's the choice that we have before us. And a look at Biden's record tells us the Palestinians can expect no mercy from him, only a change of tactics. And I think the imam that you've mentioned is absolutely right. It's a change of style. It's a change of rhetoric. But this is the old American, the American president's word once in the past, speak softly and carry a big stick. Trump didn't know how to speak softly. So when he was violent and hostile, he spoke in a harsh way. Biden won't do that. Biden will talk about peace, the need for a two-state solution. People have to sit down and talk and negotiate and be reasonable as long as Israel every single day can steal more Palestinian land and reduce Palestinian numbers inside Palestine. So it's a change of rhetoric. Yes, I agree completely.
Imad Hamad, the Hamas spokesman Hazem Qasem said such comments, the one referring to Blinken, reaffirmed the failure of relying on U.S. administrations to support Palestinian rights. Also, senior official of Islamic Jihad, Daoud Shahab, says that Blinken has delivered a slap on the face of those who bet on Washington as an honest broker. How do you view these comments? The U.S., do you think, has lost the position of being an honest broker in the eyes of Palestinians long ago?
Well, first, when we talk about human rights, we talk about universal rights that equal to all nations and all countries and all people. And we cannot be double standard about it, and we cannot be political hypocrites. I think it's hypocrisy that you preach for something and you do the other thing on the other side, or you be selective about it. Again, I think the Palestinians and all peace-loving people across the globe are not stupid, are not naive. When you talk of peace, there is a basic core foundation requirement, prerequisite for that peace that we preach about, which is justice. If justice is failed and justice is not granted to Palestinians, period, I don't think anything will change. I think that would be just a rotten baloney and a rotten political rhetoric. I think the officials are trying to affirm their unconditional support to Israel. Actually, both Republicans and Democrats, they compete who would show more loyalty and more support to Israel. So the change of administration doesn't mean much. It only means the style, the conduct, the behavior, the tactics, the approach. It will create more of a relaxed atmosphere. However, it's not going to change anything on the ground. When it comes to the Palestinian issue and the Palestinian rights, and when it comes to the Israelis, the Israeli interests will always be first. So nobody expected or expect that the Biden administration will render any drastic, dramatic changes toward this conflict. I think it will keep the door better open in a way or another for further discussion, further engagement, and further lobby efforts from the Arab American and Muslim American community as an integral part of the American makeup. And I think the community at large here is very dedicated, very passionate, very determined to continue its diligent work to affect and impact the U.S. foreign policy toward the Palestinian in particular, and the Middle East region. The U.S. never been an honest broker. The U.S. never been a neutral broker. And if you want peace, you need that a neutral partner or a neutral broker in order to induce the labor of peace that is way overdue. Unfortunately, Palestinians are going to continue to suffer. Suffering to Palestinians became part of their lifestyle. It's not by choice. They have the right to resist. They have the right to fight the occupation. And that's a basic legitimate human right that is granted to all people across the globe. Look what happened in the U.S. when the foundation of the model of democracy in America was shaken a little bit with the breach of the Capitol that we witnessed 2 weeks ago or so. The whole United States of America was in a state of shock because they expected this may happen any part of the world, but not in the U.S. We hope that this could be at the beginning of a good American wake-up call, and we all recognize, and they know it. It's not that we're saying something new, or we're creating or inventing something. The American administration knows very well that no peace can be achieved without granting the Palestinians their basic human rights.
Right. Mr. Napier, the incoming Antony Blinken said Biden thinks that the best way is to, and I read the quote, to ensure Israel's future as a Jewish democratic state and to give the Palestinians a state to which they are entitled is through the so-called two-state solution. Now, if that is a policy, then there has to be a change on the issue of settlements. The West Bank, as we know, including East Jerusalem al-Quds, is regarded as occupied territory under international law, thus making all settlements there illegal.
Well, yes, but what does America care for international law? Only one country has been convicted of terrorism by the International Criminal Court, and that's the USA. Your viewers can find out which country took them to the court. The USA is completely indifferent to international law. It is interested in power. Einstein, not just a scientist, but he was once offered the presidency of the State of Israel and refused it. Einstein said that madness is repeating the same behavior again and again, which always brings negative results. How can anyone expect the USA to be an honest broker, given their record, given Camp David, given the fact that the USA is completely unstinting in its support for Israel, has never shown any reluctance, well, since 1967, has never shown any hesitation in pumping Israel full of billions in aid and massive systems of massive weapon systems. There is no partner for peace for the Palestinians. It's the ethnic cleansing operation known as the State of Israel, and it is bound indissolubly to Washington and to the Pentagon, because Israel could not exist in its present form without this massive aid coming from Washington. And in return, it acts as an extension of American power. I don't think it will take an enormous amount of pressure for it to change. Before 1967, America did not give Israel very much aid. It was actually fairly modest. It was after 67, when Israel proved it could crush Arab nationalism, defeat Nasser, defeat Syria, and defeat Jordan, then US aid went through the roof. This is not a policy of one administration or another, as your other guest points out, but it's rooted very deeply in Israel as the 51st state of the USA, as an extension of American power into the Middle East. That can only change in the same way that Americans ended the war in Vietnam, by massive opposition to this terrible crime against the Palestinian people. And the Palestinian people now have a chance of finding fresh allies. If we're looking for some hope, it's the Squad. It's the new members on the fringe of the Democratic Party, one Palestinian, Ocasio-Cortez and others, Ilhan Omar, who are beginning to challenge the Democratic Republican consensus of war and devastation around the world and putting forward a real alternative. But Biden ain't that alternative.
Mr. Hamad, on the issue of settlements, Tel Aviv plans to construct over 2,500 new settlement units in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. What's the last minute settlement announcement has had its fair share of criticism. As we know, Turkey was one to speak out against it. Ankara said such actions, Israel intends to prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state with geographical integrity and change the status of Jerusalem al-Quds. There is a clear inconsistency regarding the issue of a viable Palestinian state, as the incoming Biden administration has mentioned, and the expansion of settlements. Give us your final thoughts on that.
Well, first, we have to keep in mind that the state of Israel, quote-unquote, is a racist apartheid state, and a racist state that occupies other people. I don't think it can be in a position to respect international law. International law is clear. The United Nations, a trail of resolutions that speak volume to achieve some justice to the Palestinians being totally disregarded by Israel. Israel is the only country in the world that is that acts and behaves above all norms of international law. Settlements are illegal.
Mr. Hamad, apologies there. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're out of time for tonight's program. Allow me to thank my guests. Mr. Imad Hamad joining us from Michigan. Also thanks to Mick Napier speaking to us from Edinburgh. Also thanks to you all for staying with us on this debate. Bye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. That is because Allah causes the night to enter the day, and causes the day to enter the night, and because Allah is hearing and seeing.
ذلك بأن الله يولج الليل في النهار ويولج النهار في الليل. That is because Allah merges the night into the day, and He merges the day into the night. وأن الله سميع بصير. And that Allah is all hearing, all seeing. So, you may remember in the previous program, we talked about the 60th verse, and that the promise of Allah is true, and the promise of aid and help is encouraging and effective. Now, in view of this fact, when it is from the side of an almighty and powerful person, then a part of the infinite power of Allah in the universe is mentioned through this verse. ذَلِكَ بِأَنَّ اللَّهَ يُولِجُ اللَّيْلَ فِي النَّهَارِ. That is because Allah merges the night into the day. So He constantly decreases from one, and according to a certain system, He adds to another. وَيُولِجُ النَّهَارَ فِي اللَّيْلِ. Merges the day into the night. This system is a fixed and perfectly accurate one, which has been running for thousands or maybe millions of years. The Arabic term yuliju is derived from ilaj and originally from waluj, which means admission. As we said, this alteration refers to the some kind of gradual and regular and at the same time accurate changes of the day and the night during different seasons of the year, and one of them decreases and the other increases. It is also probable that this refers to the sunrise and sunset, that because of the special circumstances of the atmosphere, which causes the air to surround the earth, this change does not occur suddenly. From early morning, the onset of dawn, the rays of the sun shine the higher levels of the air and slowly transfer to the lower levels of the air. It is as if the day gradually enters into the night, and the forces of light prevail over the army of the darkness. And on the contrary, at the time of sunset, at first the light begins to be somehow vanished from the lower levels of the atmosphere, and it becomes rather dim, and gradually it will be dismissed from the higher and higher levels. And this continues till there will be no ray of the sun, and the army of the darkness occupy everywhere. And if it were not such, the rising of the sun and sunset would happen in a fleeting moment, and the sudden transition of the night to the day, and the day to the night, would be spiritually and physically harmful for the human beings. And this sudden and rapid change would also, of course, cause many difficulties in this social system that we're having. So there is no problem that this holy verse refers to both of the interpretation.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Hey!
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
We shouldn't forget that the power and knowledge of Allah in relation to changing a day and night is a sign for His ability in helping the servants. And this is the point, because the verse says, ذَلِكَ, this helping the people who need aid, is because that the Almighty Allah has the power to change the day into night and vice versa. So the change of the day and night is not casual, and the administration of the whole world has a wise and knowing administrator. And at the end, the verse says, and that Allah is all-hearing, all-seeing. وَأَنَّ اللَّهَ سَمِيعٌ بَصِيرٌ. This means that Allah hears the request of the believers for help, and He is always aware of their circumstances and their needs, and at the necessary time, His grace will hasten to help them. And in the same way, He is always aware of the deeds and intentions of the enemies of the truth. And in the next verse, there will be mentioned an evidence for what was said in this verse. We will, inshallah, continue to the next verse in the later programs. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The world with reporters.
Travel agents in 13 different countries should get ready for a rush of customers. The United States has finally lifted its shockingly xenophobic and unprecedented travel ban. Iran was one of six other Muslim-majority nations which were primarily targeted, which caused ex-President Donald Trump's executive order to become called the Muslim travel ban, informally and infamously. New President Joe Biden ended the ban on his first day in office. The bigotry lasted 4 years, and the damage to American citizens, countless non-Americans, and America's image cannot be overestimated.
The real shame in this is not simply turning our back on, America's tradition of not judging people on the basis of their religion or our constitutional prohibition against that. But what's really, troubling about this is that we have gone through this process where family members have not been able to be together with loved ones.
Husbands and wives have been kept apart for years. Grandparents passed away without seeing their newborn grandchildren. Weddings, graduations, birthdays, funerals, jobs, business deals, educational exchanges. The accumulation of grief and difficulty caused by the Islamophobic ban is appalling. In many ways, the ban backfired, because it emphatically demonstrated the scope and reach of state-sponsored Islamophobia, something which had been routinely denied by the right and the left, not only in the United States, but across the West.
It's really going to require that we go through the hard work of actually implementing policies, not just in travel, but in other ways that fight against Islamophobia, because we know that it has been a feature in our society, certainly for the last 30 years, but even long before that.
The ban led to doctor shortages in a United States which would soon be unable to handle the coronavirus pandemic. It also put a pause on the so-called brain drain, which allows America to stay near the forefront of science and technology. Trump's dehumanizing of Muslims followed years of scapegoating in order to rationalize the wars across the Muslim world started by Trump's predecessors, George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Perhaps above all, the ban showed that in the American system, it is still possible to codify racism into law. The Supreme Court reversed a series of lower court decisions which allowed the ban to go into effect. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Slim hopes of progress towards peace in Yemen were swiftly dashed this month as former US President Donald Trump designated Yemen's Houthi Ansarullah movement as a foreign terrorist organization before he left office. A move widely condemned as deeply damaging to the peace process and pushing the country towards a possible new famine. Amid fears for Yemen's future, I secured an exclusive interview with the foreign minister of the Ansarullah-led government in Sana'a for a response to these disturbing developments.
The U.S. is not an international organization or some kind of an institution that has the right to designate someone as terrorist or not terrorist. The U.S. should always be concerned about its affairs, not trying to be the guardian of the whole world.
The foreign minister explained that he felt the U.S. decision was silly and that Trump was probably paid into making the choice.
I think the Trump administration decision was something paid for, and you will see it in the near future. It's something paid for to say certain things or to take some actions. So again, from our side, we are not concerned about that, and we will not deal with it.
I asked the foreign minister whether Yemen would consider a military response. He warned that if the peace process totally fails, Yemen is strong enough to fight back.
If such peace fails, we are ready for all circumstances, and our choices are wide open. And by the way, we can affect and do what we want. We are so strong to the point that we can change the whole scenario, but we will not do it for the sake of the Yemeni people.
The foreign minister also sent a message to the new U.S. President Joe Biden.
If Biden has the courage, and I think he does, they should make an announcement that this war is over, they stop the support of the Saudis and the Emiratis and any other people involved, and the war will stop, and Mr. Biden, maybe later on, will get the Nobel Prize that Trump was running after. Now Biden should run after it.
It's been reported that Biden's foreign policy team disagrees with the terror designation and that many of Trump's policies will be reversed in quick succession. But even if the U.S. ends its support for the Saudi coalition's aggression, peace may be unachievable so long as the Ansarullah-held areas are sanctioned. Robert Carter, London.
French President Emmanuel Macron has rolled out issuing an official apology for the atrocities committed by French troops in Algeria. In a statement, Macron's office said there will be no repentance or apologies for the occupation of Algeria or the deadly eight-year war that ended 132 years of French rule in the North African country. Algeria has been demanding a formal apology for years for France's colonial-era war crimes. The French presidency, however, said France will instead endeavor to face up to its history. The statement comes ahead of the publication of a major government commission report on how France has dealt with its colonial past in the North African country. The report offers proposals to address long-standing grievances, but it skirts the issue of systematic torture by French troops and does not recommend an official apology. France occupied Algeria in 1830. The African country gained independence following the Algerian War of 1954 to 1962. The war is also known as the Algerian Revolution. Algerian historians put the death toll at 1.5 million Algerian victims, while the French historians say around 400,000 people from both sides were killed in the conflict. The truth of the colonization and the War of Independence lay buried for decades. During his presidential campaign in 2017, Macron called the colonization of Algeria a crime against humanity. In September 2018, he officially acknowledged for the first time the widespread use of torture by French forces in the former colony. However, like his predecessors, Macron has so far refrained from issuing a formal apology for his country's colonial past. But grievances tied to the colonial history have weighed on French national integration, since many French citizens are Muslims of Algerian descent. As former Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner admitted in 2008, there seems to be a permanent contradiction between human rights and the foreign policy of France. The country's dark history of human rights violations and supporting dictators, especially in Africa and West Asia, serves as proof of Kouchner's remark that the French foreign policy is not based on human rights. France's support for former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein during his invasion of Iran in the 1980s, its support for Libya's longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi before his ouster in 2011, and the country's arms sales to Saudi Arabia while the kingdom is involved in the brutal war on Yemen are all indicative of such a policy. It so appears that human rights is only a weapon in the hands of French politicians to target nations that do not get along with their policies.
Democrat Joe Biden has been inaugurated as President of the United States, replacing the highly controversial Donald Trump. As a result of entrenched but minority perceptions of electoral fraud, there was not a peaceful transfer of power. The nation's capital was locked down into a fortress with more soldiers than the U.S. uses to occupy both Afghanistan and Iraq. State capitals were similarly swarming with troops nationwide. The inauguration is being called a merciful conclusion to an electoral campaign which seemingly started the day after the election of Trump in 2016, and then the most divisive vote in recent memory. Biden's inaugural speech spoke often of unity and reconciliation, but Democrats and Republicans seem to have been at each other's throats for four consecutive years. How to turn off this mutual animosity may be the most urgent problem Biden faces, but it may also be the most difficult.
47 years of Biden's being in politics, that he would actually be able to do what's necessary to heal the country. Unless, of course, there's some shift in how he sees it, and unless, of course, there's pressure from the left. Like I said, the role of labor, to actually pressure to actually improve the quality of life of working people.
Biden inherits an America which may be at its lowest point in history. America in 2020 combines 1930s economic depression, 1960s cultural division, 1860s concerns with white supremacy, and 1780s questions of political legitimacy. The coronavirus is killing Americans faster than ever. A highly divisive Senate trial of the recently impeached Trump looms. Gun sales and murder records were recently recorded nationwide, and the country remains on high alert for acts of political terrorism, to name a few of the worst problems.
If we're not talking about enacting changes that could improve the quality of life immediately, materially for working people, and I don't think that they'll be able to heal. And I'm talking about, like, Biden is talking about return to normal. Well, what's normal?
Both Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are considered to be on the right wing of the Democratic Party. Biden's cabinet is filled with holdovers from the era of Barack Obama, during which Biden was the vice president. Kamala Harris has become the highest-ranking woman ever in American history. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Azarullah Political Bureau has issued a statement to condemn the U.S. designation of the movement as a terrorist group. The statement was issued after the measure came into effect on January 19th, the last day of President Donald Trump in the office. In its statement, the movement has underlined the atrocity of the U.S. against the nations resisting its adventurist policies, including Yemen. The statement says the blacklisting of Ansarullah movement reveals that the U.S. plays a key role in Saudi-imposed war against Yemen. It calls the U.S. the major enemy of the Yemeni nation.
The American decision and designation was not surprising to us, as it came at the culmination of the U.S. hostilities against the Yemenis, ongoing on for 6 years by two succeeding American administrations. The American administration is the one who is committing acts of terrorism against the Yemenis, and if it reflects negatively on the Yemeni people, there will certainly be a response determined by the leadership.
The U.S. move has also sparked rage among the Yemeni academics and students who voiced their anger in a protest organized by Sana'a University. The protesters denounced the U.S. policies and its continuing crimes against nations. The protesters denounced the U.S. policies and its continuing crimes against nations who have not bowed to Washington's desires.
The Yemeni people of all groups, especially the academics, stand against this classification and they stand with Ansarullah. The blacklisting will not harm Ansarullah as it did not harm Hezbollah and all other free people in the world. Rather, it may harm ordinary Yemenis only. We reject this decision and refuse to call the Ansarullah movement a terrorist group.
Yemenis are concerned that the U.S. blacklisting of the Ansarullah movement may impact the humanitarian situation in Yemen. Amid the ongoing war that was launched by the Saudi-led coalition in March 2015, the devastating war has so far killed tens of thousands of civilians and injured thousands of others in Yemen, while displacing millions in the country.
Yemenis say the U.S. blacklisting of the Ansarullah movement is an unacceptable move, prompted by the Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. They say the move is aimed at putting more pressure on Yemen, already in dire situation from war and the blockade imposed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition. Abdulatif al-Washali, Sana'a.
In July 2020, following the enforcement of new national security laws on Hong Kong by China, the UK announced plans to expand visa rights to Hong Kong residents who claimed British National Overseas or BNO status before Britain handed over its former colony in 1997. Until recently, BNO passports did not give Hong Kong citizens the right of residence in the UK, but Number 10 has now changed the rules.
We made clear, Mr. Speaker, that if China continued down this path, we would reintroduce a new route for those with British national overseas status to enter the UK, granting them limited leave to remain, with the ability to live and work in the UK and thereafter to apply for citizenship. And that is precisely what we will do now.
China and Hong Kong both say this violates the Sino-British Declaration that paves the way for Hong Kong to return to Chinese rule. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam says the BNO is a form of travel document, not a form of nationality.
If one side, and that is the UK government, tries to deviate from that mutual understanding and bilateral agreement, then of course it's legitimate for the other side, that is the Central People's Government, to consider any countermeasures. And the Hong Kong SAR government will, of course, support any countermeasures to be adopted by the Central People's Government.
UK-China relations deteriorated in 2020. The UK banned Chinese telecom giant Huawei from the build-out of the UK's 5G network. it put forward a proposal to screen and block certain mergers and acquisitions from Chinese investors on national security grounds, and as a former colonial power decided to throw its weight around, declaring China's national security laws on Hong Kong to be a breach of the Sino-British Joint Declaration. On this pretext, Number 10 is offering almost three-quarters of Hong Kong's population a fast-track route to British citizenship, stoking fears of brain drain in the city, especially in its healthcare system. England alone has around 50,000 vacancies for registered nurses, and the COVID-19 pandemic has thrown the NHS's staffing crisis into stark relief. Brexit has made sourcing health professionals from Europe much more difficult, and strict immigration policies also make recruitment from abroad very challenging. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The ground forces of Iran's army kicked off war games along the Makran coasts of the Sea of Oman, southeast of Iran. The drills called Iqtedar or Power 99 started with the participation of airborne units, special forces, and quick reaction units. The troops received logistical and combat support from the Air Force and the Army Ground Forces Airborne Division at the coastal zones in Hormozgan province. A combination of homegrown and creative military tactics was practiced in the offense exercise based on the new structure of the ground forces.
The main purpose of the war games is to evaluate the mobility and offense power of the rapid reaction forces and corps and the mobile offense units of the Army ground forces. They also practice rapid and decisive response to threats on the hypothetical enemy's coasts.
We talked to Iran's Army Commander Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi, who attended the drills, asking him if the extensive war games are in reaction to U.S. deployment of forces to the region in recent weeks.
It seems that the Americans are somehow confused and are suffering from indecisiveness. This is the first time in the U.S. history that they are in a very inappropriate condition. Our drills are generally preemptive, but as they may make some insane moves, we stage these maneuvers to say we are ready against any calculation error by the adversaries.
We also talked to the war games commanders, who gave more details regarding the drills on the land and at the sea.
Our parachuters descended from planes and then got on armored personnel carriers to approach the mock enemy targets and destroy them. In another part of the exercise, some special forces and divers will descend from choppers on the sea surface to get to the beach and fight mock enemy forces.
The Iranian military forces have held several massive maneuvers over the past few weeks. The importance of this year's drills conducted by the Army's forces relies on the native nature of the equipment used in the event. Almost all of the equipment used in the war games this year are homegrown. Human Abedi, JOSC.
Amid the recent growing of coronavirus infections in Israeli jails and the medical negligence of Israeli-Palestinian prisoners' conditions, the Palestinian Legislative Council, along with the Ministry of Palestinian Prisoners, held a press conference to express concerns of the serious condition of the prisoners at Israeli jails. Palestinians demanded an urgent action from the international community to save their life.
Our prisoners are dying inside the Israeli jails as the Israeli regime is practicing a slow death policy against them. The Israeli regime doesn't provide the infected prisoners with the required medical care. The international community should step in to save our prisoners' lives.
According to Palestinian Prisoners' Organization, over 250 prisoners are diagnosed with the coronavirus, and the number is expected to rise due to the intentional medical neglect at Israeli jails, as Israel has stalled delivery of the vaccine to the Palestinian prisoners. Palestinians also demanded an international supervision to vaccinate the Palestinian prisoners and make sure they are delivering the required health care.
Palestinian prisoners are facing a serious danger that threatens their lives. Israel is using this virus against our prisoners to put further pressure on them. The coronavirus has already reached a number of Israeli jails and infected almost 250 Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian sources say over 5,000 Palestinians are currently detained in Israeli jails, mostly with no charge. Palestinian resistance has warned that they won't remain silent and hold Israel responsible for the consequences of neglecting the health condition of Palestinian prisoners.
The prisoners' issue is among our top priorities, and we will do our best to set our Palestinian inmates free. The resistance holds the Israeli regime responsible for all the consequences of this dangerous move.
Palestinian detainees have continuously resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express the outrage at the detention. While some 5,000 Palestinian inmates are suffering in Israeli jails amid the coronavirus pandemic, Israel has deprived them from their right to health care. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
A letter for you.
And this is a letter written by the leader of the Muslim Ummah.
Special program on the message of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei to the youth in Europe and North America.
Open the windows! Get the world here!
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. I am Muzaffar Abbas Haider.
I am Murtaza Rezavi.
And I am Brother Ali Shah.
Last episode we were discussing about the letter published by Ayatollah Khamenei.
The Supreme Leader of Iran.
The Supreme Leader of Iran. Thank you very much, Murtaza. Addressing the youth in particular and talking
about... And we are the youth as well. Let the viewers know we are youth.
That's true, yeah, we are youth. Irtaza more than us. Irtaza, how old are you again?
19.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
That's very cute.
How old are you, Mustafa?
I'm 23. Coming on to 4.
How old do I look?
50.
You look about 50.
I'm only 23, bro.
Really?
MashaAllah, yeah. You look really wise for your age. Anyway, moving swiftly on. The letter.
This thing has been causing interest.
It's causing a lot of interest. People across the world are really, really blowing this thing up. They're freaking out about it, so to speak. They're saying...
Well, they are and aren't.
Well, they are and aren't.
Like, for instance, if it was... Sorry to cut in, but like, if it was something like, for example, Iran tests a missile... Or Supreme Leader says something about, I don't know, I don't like cookies or something. It would be the front page, it would be on every tabloid, every single newspaper. Iran Supreme Leader, I don't know, did this, did that, la-di-da-di-da-di-da. But because this has, funnily enough, this is directed to the youth about thinking openly and what so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, which really hurts my feelings, the media has kind of covered it up once again.
That can be argued. Actually, yeah, I have to agree with you. It's not as much of a hot topic as, you know, war and Iran being a big monster and stuff like that. But having said that, VT Veterans Today, a military foreign affairs journal, had a big headline on this. It said, Iran Supreme Leader to Western Youth, think for yourself. Don't believe the propaganda, study Islam without preconceptions. And it had a big picture of Ayatollah Khamenei on it. Journalist Kevin Barrett writes...
Where was this from again, sorry?
From VT Veterans Today.
Where is that?
It's called VT. Huh?
Okay.
It's an American...
American.
News
outlet.
Organization.
News coverage.
Outlet. Thank you. So Kevin Barrett, journalist, writes, some readers may be surprised to hear an Islamic leader... urging free thought. In the West, it is usually assumed that free thinkers are opposed to religion. Today's Western orthodoxy holds that religion and free thought are always at loggerheads. They're always against each other. This perspective dominates our schools and universities, where people like Galileo, Voltaire, and Darwin are lionized for battling the censorship of the church. Now, this Western journalist argues the actual history of the relationship between science and religion in the West is completely different from the heroic free-thinking atheists versus blinkered fundamentalists. It's a myth. In reality, this argument, this journalist argues, is that the vast majority of the West's great thinkers were deeply religious men who were inspired to do their great thinking by religion.
Hmm.
Now, that says it all for me. That's the effect that Ayatollah Khamenei's letter has had on a lot of people out there, and I think many of the listeners would be very surprised to hear that.
Hmm.
Irtaza, what's your take on this?